Welcome to Radio Tabule, fresh content west of the Middle East. The weekly podcast brought to you by the Levantine Cultural Center. Based in Los Angeles, the center promotes a greater understanding of the Middle East and North Africa with artistic and educational programs that bridge political and religious divides. This week's podcast features the event Memorial Reading for Mutanabi Street, commemorating the March 5th, 2007 car bombing on Mutanabi Street, the lively center of Baghdad bookselling. Poets and writers who participated include Chris Abani, Bovo Soleil, Lilo Lalami, Suzanne Loomis, Majid Nafisi, Maricela Norte, Shole Wolpe, Terry Wolverton, with music by the Iraqi ensemble led by Sadun Albayati. The event was presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles and co-sponsored by Levantine Cultural Center, with support from the LA Poetry Festival, Penn Center USA, and Red Hand Press. It was moderated by Jordan Elbrably, Louise Steinman, and Justin Veach, and recorded on November 19, 2008.
Collections include Hands Washing Water and Calicuta Republic. He is a professor at the University of California, Riverside, and the recipient of many awards, including the Penn USA Freedom to Write Award, a Lannan Literary Fellowship, and the Penn Hemingway Book Prize. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Chris Abani.
In my culture, when we have memoriams, they're not a time for mourning, they're a time for joy. The thing about literature is that it doesn't die. When they burned that library in Constantinople nearly 1,000 years ago, the conquerors said, "Now we have destroyed them, we have burned their literature." But they didn't know that literature lives in the human heart. And what I found out 2 months ago, my mother died, and we cremated her, is that the temperature of the crematorium is set to the temperature it takes to burn the human heart. The human heart doesn't die. I'm going to read you 3 poems by Mahmoud Darwish. And also, I also want to extend a wish to you that I hope, inshallah, that your hearts don't die. Mahmoud says, "The hearts of people are their nationality. Take away my passport." The first poem comes from It's a Song, It's a Song, published in 1984. And the first poem comes from 4 personal addresses. 1, 1 square meter of prison. It's the door, and beyond it is the paradise of the heart. Our things and everything is ours are interchangeable. And the door is a door, the door of metonymy, the door of legend, a door to keep September gentle. A door that invites fields to begin their wheat. The door has no door. Yet I can go outside and love both what I see and what I do not see. All of these wonders and beauty are on earth, there, and yet the door has no door. My prison cell accepts no light except into myself. Peace be unto me. Peace be unto the sound barrier. I wrote 10 poems to eulogize my freedom here and there. I love the particles of sky that slip through the skylight, a meter of light where horses race, and I love my mother's little things, the aroma of coffee in her dress when she opens the door of day to her flock of hens. I love the fields between autumn and winter, the children of our prison guard, and the magazines displayed on a distant sidewalk. I also wrote 20 satiric poems about the place in which we have no place. My freedom is not to be what they want, but to enlarge my prison cell and carry on my song of the door. A door is a door, yet I can walk out within me, and so on and so forth. The second poem comes from Why Have You Left the Horses Alone? I see my ghost coming from afar. As if I were a balcony, I gaze upon whatever I desire. I see my friends currying the evening's mail, wine, bread, a novel, and records. I gaze upon a seagull and troop trucks arriving to uproot the trees of this place. I gaze upon the dog of the neighbor who left for Canada 1.5 years ago. I gaze upon the name of Al-Mutanabi journeying from Tiberias to Egypt on a horse of song. I gaze upon the Persian flower leaping the iron fence, as if I were a balcony. I gaze upon whatever I desire. Were it up to me to begin again, I would make the same choice, roses on the same fence. I would travel the same roads that might or might not lead to Cordoba. I would lay my shadow down on two rocks so that birds could nest on one of my boughs. I would break open my shadow for the scent of almond to float in a cloud of dust and grow tired on the slopes. Come closer and listen. Share my crust of bread, drink my wine. Don't leave me alone like the weeping willow. I love countries unendangered by songs of migration, desires, or the appeal to blood. I love women whose hidden desires make horses put an end to their lives at the threshold. If I return, I will return to the same rows and follow the same steps, but never to Cordoba. Thank you.
Our next reader is Beau Beausoleil. Beau Beausoleil is a radio host, bookseller, and the author of 9 books of poetry, the latest entitled Concealed in Language. He lives in San Francisco, California.
A Palestinian poet said recently that one of the functions of poetry is to keep the language from going insane. Looking up here on this sign, Watanabe Street starts here, I think it's for all of us to remember that every time someone sits down and opens a book, every time we as writers sit down and pick up our pen, that is where Watanabe Street starts. It's no different here than it is there. I'm going to start with an Iraqi poet and end with an Iraqi poet, and in the middle are my own. The first poem is by an Iraqi poet named Sinan Antun. It's called Strings, and there are 4 discrete parts of a much longer poem. This was published on a broadside as part of a broadside series for the Watanabe Street Coalition. 1, a shelf in the heart's archives where postponed deaths are stacked next to rumors about happiness. 2, the last line in a manuscript whose burning has been delayed 8 centuries. 3, the migration route taken by a rare bird in its last season before extinction. 4, the shadow of the last palm tree in a burning orchard as its fronds comb the wind's hair and it is consoled by the sun. My poems are quite short. I would just ask that you let them wash over you. This is called One. There are 3 words at the wrist and the forehead, and these are the first words of naming. There is a word in each word, a word responsible for the divine. And there are 3 words described of blood. These are the words offended by memory. O'clock. The black sky at the very end of our fingers is rolling over. Who are these people? What letters can these bloodied tongues whistle? Who brings their ashes to the table? Who has devoured all this light? This is called Starting the Intricate. It's in 3 parts. 1, this boy collects gunshots. These 3 twigs are his rough sky. 2, his careening bed of rocks lifts him and the evening flourishes. 3, while we are in this room, hundreds of days come down again, and someone decides who merits another breath. This is called Upon Living. They shove your feet out of the smokestack kitchen. They narrow the big C into a line of your sweat. Then they take away your last word, and then they take away another. Now you put the keys back in your pocket, and now you push on the door until it is in flame. Until it is in flame. It's called a break in the trees. Starting in the kitchen, uselessly listening to justice. There is a length of water hung in the breeze of heaven, a regret in the course of breathing that makes two times the dead the rule. Surely time has ended among us. There is a break in the trees. Everything falls to our inside. It's called markings, and it's in two parts. One, the land is leveled, the eyewitnesses are moved to a yard, a street, the road is made smooth. Two, we have the ability to not regret, not one death, and then exactly two. Even before another. And in this approximate silence, we have felt that not regretting has spared us loneliness. This is called At the Door. You did not tell me about these hours, how thick they were and wounded. I hear myself telling someone to punch me just to figure out the order of my beliefs. Someone else in my clothes who would view this and move on. Explain again the conditions that will bring along the morning and what it is here that convenes the night. This is the last of my poems. It's called Shaken. We have resumed our dance, a dance as steady as this whiskey beside us, a dance as level as the tracks of midnight in our pockets. We are looking through the recent world, through the noise that has shaken us out of it. We know the shapes in the rivers between us. We know that we are still sitting here. We have not seen yet the rude length of our appetites. We have not whispered yet the words that we need to suffer. And this last poem by another Iraqi poet, Adnan Moshen, called More Rare. More rare than a bird stumbling on its shadow, than an ant lying in wait for its prey. More rare than a raven with white wings, more rare than a tornado enveloped in my arms, than a mutinous stick, than a docile flame, more rare than all that is to find myself at peace for a moment. Thank you.
So Leila Lalami is a native of Morocco. She's a recipient of a Fulbright Fellowship. Her work has appeared in the Boston Globe, the Los Angeles Times, The Nation, the New York Times, and elsewhere. And her debut book of fiction, of course, is Hope and Other Dangerous Pursuits, which I do highly recommend. It was published in the fall of 2005. It's been translated so far into five languages. She is now an assistant professor of creative writing at the University of California, Riverside.
This first poem is by Mutanabbi himself.
أنا الذي نظر الأعمى إلى أدبي وأسمعت كلماتي من به صمم أنام ملأ جفوني عن شواردها ويسهر الخلق جراها ويختصم وجاهل مده في جهله ضحكي حتى أتته يد فراسة وفم إذا رأيت نيوب الليث بارزة فلا تظنن أن الليث يبتسم ومهجتي من هم صاحبها أدركتها بجواد ظهره حرم رجلاه في الركض رجل واليدان يد وفعله ما تريد الكف والقدم ومرهف سرت بين الجحلفين به حتى ضربت وموج الموت يلتطم الخيل والليل والبيداء تعرفني والسيف والرمح والقرطاس والقلم. And now for the translation, this poem was written by Al-Mutanabbi in praise of himself after a quarrel with Saif al-Dawla, his patron. And this is the translation by Salma Khadra Jayousi. The assembly in this hall shall know that I'm the best man that treads this earth. I am he whose verse the blind man has poured on. I am he whose words the deaf have heard. I sleep through the night not waiting for rhymes to come, while others stay awake and struggle to catch a rhyme. Look at the ignorant. My good humor allowed him to continue his foolishness until he was annihilated by hand and mouth alike. If ever you see the lion showing his teeth, do not suppose the lion is just smiling. Many an enemy has sought my destruction, but I faced him on a strong-backed steed. Its hind legs galloping are as one, its forelegs two. He acts as the guiding hand and the spurring foot would have it. And my sword is sharp, I brandished it between two armies strong until I struck with it while the waves of death were high. The steed, the knight, and the wilderness know me well. The sword knows me and the spear, the pen and parchment too. This next poem is from Mahmoud Darwish again. This is from the collection, The Butterfly's Burden. And in this poem, he eulogizes the Iraqi poet As-Sayyab. أتذكر السياب يصرخ في الخليج سدن عراق عراق ليس سوى العراق ولا يرد سوى الصدى. أتذكر السياب في هذا الفضاء السومري. تغلبت أنثى على عقم السديم وأورثنا الأرض والمنفى معا. أتذكر السياب إن الشعر يولد في العراق فكن عراقيا لتصبح شاعرا يا صاحبي. أتذكر السياب لم يجد الحياة كما تخيل بين دجلة والفرات فلم يفكر مثل جلجامش بأعشاب الخلود ولم يفكر بالقيامة بعدها. أتذكر السياب يأخذ عن حمورابي الشرائع كي يغطي سوءته ويسير نحو ضريحه متصوفا. أتذكر السياب حين أصاب بالحمى وأهذي إخوتي كانوا يعدون العشاء لجيش هولاكو ولا خدم سواهم إخوتي. أتذكر السياب لم نحلم بما لا يستحق النحل من قوت ولم نحلم بأكثر من يدين صغيرتين تصافحان غيابنا. أتذكر السياب حدادون موتى ينهضون من القبور ويصنعون قيودنا. أتذكر السياب إن الشعر تجربة ومنفى توأمان ونحن لم نحلم بأكثر من حياة كالحياة وأن نموت على طريقتنا عراق عراق ليس سوى العراق. The English translation is by Fadi Juda. I recall a Sayyab screaming at the Gulf in vain. Iraq, Iraq, nothing but Iraq. And only echo replies. I recall a Sayyab in the Sumerian space. A female overcame nebulous sterility and bequeathed us land and exile together. I recall a Sayyab. Poetry is born in Iraq. Be an Iraqi to become a poet, my friend. I recall a Sayyab. He didn't find life as he imagined between the Tigris and the Euphrates, and didn't think like Gilgamesh of immortality herbs, and didn't think of the judgment day that follows. I recall a Sayyab taking from Hammurabi the tablets to cover his loins, then walking towards his tomb, a Sufi. I recall a Sayyab when I am stricken with fever and I hallucinate. My brothers were preparing dinner for Hulagu's army. They were the only servants, my brothers. I recall a Sayyab. We didn't dream of what bees don't deserve of sustenance, and we didn't dream of more than two handshakes that greet our absence. I recall at Sayyab, dead blacksmiths rise from the graves and forge our chains. I
I recall a sayab, poetry is the twins, experience and exile. And we didn't dream of more than a life like life, and that we die in our own way. Iraq, Iraq, nothing but Iraq. Thank you.
Suzanne Lummis's reviews and poetry have appeared in the Hudson Review, Plowshares, Poetry International, and other magazines. Her collection, In Danger, was part of Heyday Books' California Poetry Series. She is the director of the Los Angeles Poetry Festival and editor of the literary web magazine, SpeechlessTheMagazine.org. She teaches poetry writing through the UCLA Extension Writers Program.
I understand from my readings that in Iraq there is a saying that three great rivers run through that country, the Tigris, the Euphrates, and the third is poetry. My kind of people, the Iraqis. I'm going to read three poems by contemporary Iraqi poets. Most of these four poets have been in, left the country for a long time and have lately returned. The first two poems are by Fawzi Karim. And this involves a street, not Mutanabe Street. It is a street where there were many clubs and taverns. But I figure that if you're looking for a couple of poets and you can't find them, you've looked in the bookstore, you've looked in the cafe, you've tried their home, their cell phone, they might be in a tavern at the gardenia's door. In front of the gardenia's locked door, a middle-aged man with the look of a retired man is waiting. I also am a middle-aged man, just returned from exile. I squat a few feet from him, and without wasting much time, I ask, "Do you know when it opens?" "Oh, Gardenia Bar was my hangout before the war. I used to have my own corner with my friends all around me. After the war, oblivion folded it. But I've been coming here for a long time, waiting every day for its door to open." He stretched a hand out, holding a roll cigarette, and I stretched a hand to take the cigarette, and smoke spread, hiding two men, waiting at the locked door on the sidewalk of Nuwa Street. And this also by Fawzi Karim. You know, a sort of, he doesn't always write about the war because other things continue on while wars are going on. Apparently, unrequited love is one of the things that continues going on. Well, so there's a kind of melancholy, though, that pervades all of his poems. Letters keep going. Why do I alone write letters every month? I try to respond to your silence, pretending that your silence is more eloquent than my words. Every month, I add to your name all that I love of your traits. Dear lady of longing, dear jasmine, and dear flowers that encircle gardens until my windowpane gathers dew from a mouse vapor. Sighs of the lady of longing. But it was night. Breaths of cold night wind. So I finish the letters. After 30 days, I try to respond to your silence again, pretending that your silence is more eloquent than my words. On one side, always my departing letters, on the other, your silence. And between them, the earth and the sun keep rotating. Even histories are chronicled in the names of these two, the one in writing and the other in silence, while empires rise and fall. This is Fadhil al-Sultani. So I consider this to be a kind of upside-down, backwards love poem by a man who looks at a painting and understands the suffering of the artist. Van Gogh. "Go away! How many times should I see you dangling from the ceiling of hunger from the 19th century till now? I see you every night hanging from the ceiling of hunger, and I weep as if I were your brother, though not born to your mother. I look at your empty chair and feel guilty for not sitting in it. I look at your yellow corn cobs and feel guilty for not picking them. I look at your whore and feel guilty for not marrying her. Go away. I am the stranger coming from another land, a land you have not even heard of. Aren't you satisfied with a whole nation? Take your empty chair, your field of yellow corn, your whore. Take even your cut ear. For who would need it? And go away. I'm satisfied with my empty chair, my field of yellow corn, and my son with its throat cut since birth. And this is a Kurdish poet who was involved with the Kurdish liberation movement. This is my final poem. It is a Shirko Bikas. In a forest, darkness came, and in its lair, a lion thought of how tomorrow it could attack the neighboring tiger. The tiger was thinking of how tomorrow to skin the fox. The fox was thinking of how tomorrow it could approach the garden's gate to eat the baby doves. The dove was thinking of how tomorrow to bring together the hunter, the birds, and the animals of the forest. How could she wondered.
Our next reader, Majid Nafisi, was born in Iran in 1952. He published poetry, criticism, and an award-winning children's book in Iran. During the 1970s, Dr. Nafisi was politically active against the Shah's regime. After the 1979 revolution, as the new regime began to suppress the opposition, his first wife, Azat Tabayan, and his brother, Saeed, were among the many to be executed. He fled Iran in 1983, eventually settling in Los Angeles with his son, Azad. He has since published 6 volumes of poetry in both English and Farsi, as well as numerous books of criticism. Among them are Muddy Shoes, Father and Son, and Modernism and Ideology in Persian Literature.
I wrote this poem on March 19th, 2 weeks after tragedy in on Watanabe Street. I wrote it for the friendship of Persians and Arabs, the peoples of Iran and Iraq and other Arab countries. I have no hope on governments. I only hope that people get together and do something for themselves. I have to put this to set the stage for you. For this poem, Mutanabbi in Arabic means the one who pretends to be a prophet, because Mutanabbi, who lived on the 10th century, he belonged to a movement called Qarmati. They were Shia extremists, and after that he went to Persia with the King Azad of Daylaman, and that's where, at the little river Khor in Shiraz, in Persia, he hears the sound of tigress. So he wants to get back to Baghdad. On the bookseller's street of Baghdad, I saw Mutanabbi returning from Persia. He had heard the sound of tigress by the Khor River, calling him back to Baghdad. On his way, he had given his swords to the Qarmati rebels in Gonaveh, because he knew that from then on, he would have no friend but the pen. He had told himself, I, Mutanabbi, poet, prophet, and swordsman, moved into the desert from Kufa with the Bedouins of Qarmati revolt.
looking for the secret of brotherhood. I went to Aleppo with Prince Saif of Hamdan to stand against the Frank Crusaders and travel to Persia with King Azod of Daylaman to spread the seed of Arabic poetry. Now, I want to return to Iraq, only to look from the bridge of Baghdad at the fishermen in their nutshells boats who are gently rowing on the Tigris River. I want to see the Gnostic Mandians in their white towels, making ablution in the shallow waters while looking at the North Star. And from the diners on Abu Nawas Street, I want to buy lentil soup and mazghouf fish barbecued on pomegranate sticks. How happy it is to walk around near the reeds by the river and watch the kisses of a young couple from behind a palm tree. How happy it is to sit by the old harpist and listen to the story of Tigris River rushing from mountains to the Persian Gulf. How happy it is going to the Turkish bath before Muazzin call to prayer and surrender one's body to the caressing fingers, cotton washcloth and bubbling soaps, and when taking dry towels, ask the receptionist for a glass of ice water. Then, in a happy mood, going to the house of wisdom and seeing the dazzles of joy in the eyes of the youth. Mutanabbi told himself, I am becoming a child again, enchanted with playing words. Looking down from the bridge of Baghdad, Mutanabbi saw nothing but blood running constantly in the Tigris River. Fishermen were hunting the dead men, farmers planting human bones, mothers giving birth to headless babies behind bushes and sand domes. The beheaded running in the shadow waters and the water sellers shouting in the alleys, fresh blood, fresh blood. On the bookseller's row, a red fog had covered the sky and the earth. Muhammad, the binder, was looking in the ruins for the cut of his brothers. Father of Hussein, the homeless peddler, was talking to one of his son's shoes. Shatri, the bookseller, was shedding tears, running behind the half-burned leaves of poetry on the alleys on the east side of the Tigris River. He was humming one of Mutanabbi's couplet. Even the blind can see the letters and the deaf hears the sounds of my poetry. Mutanabbi stood, his robe clung to his skin, and his hair drip was wet with blood. He asked himself, people or books? Books or people? Should he put down the pen and take the sword again? The Tigris did not answer. It was running fast, like an arrow shot from a bow.
Our next reader, Maricela Norte, is an East Los Angeles-based writer. Her work has appeared in various publications, such as Bomb, Propagandist, and West Magazine. Her first collection of prose, East LA Days, Fellini Nights, is forthcoming from City Works Press.
I am reading something tonight written by Viggo Mortensen, and it's called Back to Babylon. Accept and forget difference or desire that separates and leaves us longing or repelled. Why briefly return to play in broken places, to mock the ground, to collect infant shards, coins, fossils, or the familiar empty canisters and casings that glint from poisoned roots in the blackened dust? We make bad ghosts and are last to know or believe we too will fade, just as our acrid smoke and those strange flakes of skin and strands of hair will into largely undocumented extinction. Lie down. Lie down. Sleep is the best thing for being awake. Do as we've always been told and done. No backward glances or second thoughts, leaving sad markers buried in the sand. Sleep now. Dream of children with their heads still on, of grandmothers unburdening clotheslines at twilight, of full kettles slow ticking over twig embers. Ignore boneless, nameless victims that venture out on bitter gravel to claim remains while we rest. Pay at the window for reheated, prejudiced incantations. Take them home and enjoy with widescreen, half-digested, replayed previews of solemn national celebration. Then sleep, by all means. We'll need all the energy we can muster for compiling this generation's abridged anthology of official war stories, highlights of heedless slaughter to burnish our long and proud imperial tradition. At some point, by virtue of accidentally seeing and listening, we may find ourselves participating in our own rendering. Few of our prey will be left alive enough to water the sun with their modest, time-rubbed repetitions, to rephrase their particular unifying laws. Our version of events has already made its money back in foreign distribution and pre-sales. All victory deadlines must be set. It can get so quiet with or without the dead watching our constant deployments. From our tilted promontory, we may see one last woman scuffle away across cracked parchment of dry wash beneath us, muttering to herself. Or is she singing at us as she rounds the sheared granite face and disappears into a grove of spindly, trembling tamarisk shadows lining the main road? We'll soon hear little other than our breathing as shale cools and bats rise to feed, taking over from sated swallows. Night anywhere is home. Darkness a cue for turning inward. Quiet an invitation to review our expensive successes before morning extraction from the twin rivers of our common cradle.
I'd like to introduce Sholei Wolpe, the next author in our evening. Sholei Wolpe is a native of Iran, is a poet, literary translator, and writer. She is the author of Sin, Selected Poems of Farrukh Farrokhzad, as well as her own debut collection, The Scar Saloon, and the forthcoming Rooftops of Tehran. She is the associate editor of the forthcoming Norton Anthology of Modern Literature from the Muslim World. Ladies and gentlemen, Sholei Wolpe.
I'm going to start with a poem by an Iraqi poet, not a famous one. He wrote this poem at a refugee camp in 1992. His name is Haydar Al-Kabi, and it's from this wonderful collection, Atlanta Review, Iraq, Bombardment. The city sits quietly. The sky above her is a hammer. The city is empty. Whispers disturb her tranquility. Steps glitter and their echoes like bats cling to balconies. The city is jammed with vehicles. Vainly they spin their wheels on the oil of the streets. The city breaks her mirror, the river splitting her like a large wound. The river rises upward in a blaze. Seagulls stretch out their necks amid the shipwrecks. The river collapses and drags them to the bottom. The city cannot gather in her children. Sometimes they crawl, sometimes they fly. They cling to her like sins. They are flung like fruits, her branches vainly reaching out for them. She tries to break loose from her roots to gather up her little ones. The city is standing. Her head is in her hands. She swirls, 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 becomes dizzy, sinks, and signboards. The city takes a cup of water to swallow her words. Now she is hushed, silencing her children. Straining her ears, she waits the sudden falling of the sky. I'm going to read a few poems of my own. No apple trees in this paradise. The newscaster on the radio speaks of empty streets in Iraq, except for the dance of gunmen. With the tip of my manicured finger, I quiet her and let the cause of crows in the garden hold sway. Our street in Redlands is empty except for the white rabbit's mad dash across the peony-bordered road. To protect our paradise, we have outsourced our sins to hells we help daily create. There is a serpent in my garden, but I tell it I have no apple trees. Here, we only grow blood oranges. In the end, what folly. In an abandoned elementary school, a priest baptizes Marines in a makeshift pond brimming with canteen water. Purified, the young soldiers can hope for paradise. Outside, bearded men answer the noon prayer call, rest guns against battered walls, turn to Mecca, bow, hands on knees before merciful Allah. Prayer purified, they too wish for paradise. And in the end, what folly, O God of gods, what folly takes them all to a sunless, dreamless land. I didn't ask for my parents. It isn't like you bend your dainty spirit neck down from God's baby soul land and point to a copulating couple who strike your fancy. Don't think it works that way. You are blindfolded and shut down through heaven's tunnel into life, and where you plop willy-nilly, that's your home. The Jewish couple may be in the act at the same time as their Muslim neighbor. Where you end up, even the cherub who pushed you off the edge can't know. We grew up forgetting our incidental placement, become fond of whatever bread and religion we are fed. Listen, who has salvation when we all claim it? I'm going to end with a poem called The Deep Dive. Stevie's raisin-colored braids, a shade lighter than his skin, bob up down as the waves punch the boat. His signals go down. I don't. I stay close to the boat, hold tight the taut rope, can't breathe. Not the air in the tank, not the air in the air. My lungs inflate, deflate, but that's beside the point. I can't frickin' breathe. And I yell this to the waves, to the boat, to Stevie, who magically surfaces beside me, an Oris brown god in goggles, regulator hose dangling by his mouth. He holds my hand between his palms, says, "But you are breathing, you are." I look at him, and even in this panic, this feeling of imminent death, I note how beautiful he is. How I can perhaps outlive the storm in this man's brawny arms, let myself go, and the hell with the world, with who I am, or am supposed to be, with my anxious lover waiting at the shore. Relax, baby, says Stevie. I'll stay with you. He pulls me into his arms, and I breathe deep from the tank strapped on my back. Stealthily, he releases air from my jacket, adds a cube of weight to my belt, and down we go, down into the broth of another world. The sea bottom is a sandy desert flush against massive rocks, and there are cacti, tiny Joshua trees, and brown grass dancing to the water currents, silent tango. Time means nothing here. Palestine, Israel, and Tehran mean nothing here. My daughter contemplating suicide at 12 means nothing here. Sons in military fatigues breathing Iraqi air means nothing here. Even women giving life and grenades taking them away mean nothing here. Here, the fish are birds. Electric blue fins, wings, and beneath this airless sky, Stevie and I.
But we've reached our seventh and final reader of the evening. Terry Wolverton is the author of 7 books of fiction, memoir, and poetry, including Embers, Insurgent Muse, and most recently, Shadow and Praise. She is the founder of Writers at Work, a creative writing center here in Los Angeles.
I'm going to begin with a poem. It's so frustrating to me that if you're educated in the United States, you really don't learn anything at all about the non-Western world. And I've been a feminist for a long time, and I didn't realize that one of the most celebrated poets in the Arab language, modern poets in the Arab language, is a woman, an Iraqi woman, Nazik al-Malaika, and she died just this June. This poem was translated from the Arabic by Rebecca Carroll Johnson, called Love Song for Words. Why do we fear words when they have been rose-palmed hands, fragrant, passing gently over our cheeks, and glasses of heartening wine sipped one summer by thirsty lips? Why do we fear words when among them are words like unseen bells, whose echo announces in our troubled lives the coming period of enchanted dawn, drenched in love and life? So why do we fear words? We took pleasure in silence. We became still, fearing the secret might part our lips. We thought that in words lay an unseen ghoul, crouching, hidden by the letters from the ear of time. We shackled the thirsty letters. We forbade them to spread the night for us as a cushion, dripping with music, dreams, and warm cups. Why do we fear words? Among them are words of smooth sweetness, whose letters have drawn the warmth of hope from two lips, and others that, rejoicing in pleasure, have waded through momentary joy with two drunk eyes. Words, poetry, tenderly turned to caress our cheeks, sounds that, asleep in their echo, lies a rich color, a rustling, a secret ardor, a hidden longing. Why do we fear words? If their thorns have once wounded us, then they have also wrapped their arms around our necks and shed their sweet scent upon our desires. If their letters have pierced us and their face callously turned from us, then they have also left us with an oud in our hands. And tomorrow they will shower us with life. So pour us two full glasses of words. Tomorrow we will build ourselves a dream nest of words, high with ivy trailing from its letters. We will nourish its buds with poetry and water its flowers with words. We will build a balcony for the timid rose with pillars made of words and a cool hall flooded with deep shade guarded by words. Our life we have dedicated as a prayer. To whom shall we pray but to words? This is a poem that I wrote in 2003. Upon hearing the news that the library in Baghdad had been allowed to burn to the ground. It's a sestina. It was published in Prairie Schooner, and it's called Burning History. Half a world away, ashes from the gutted library sift through empty streets, deserted even by soldiers whose weapons aimed to waste a regime, not spare a civilization. Smoke filters the sun white. California poet, I finger my white page, try to coax words from the ashes of my overburdened brain. Civilization keeps speeding up, gobbling the empty spaces in the calendar. Is poetry a waste of time, pursuit of fools, not soldiers? I'd never don the uniform of soldier. I'd rather dress in layers of white, take my begging bowl, waste my education, than to smart bomb to ashes this old city. It would hollow me, empty me to ravage an ancient civilization. And what could we mean when we say civilization if our conflicts are still settled by soldiers? All night I sing to the empty moon, her arms so cold and white. I rub my eyes to flush the ashes out, on my hands the stench of waste. I used to spend my days wasted, having turned my back on civilization, recycling the ashes from my pipe, convinced of my superiority to soldiers. I had the luck of being white. I could choose to keep my mind empty. But now I feel the world more empty for the loss of books I never read. History wasted. Pages once bone white, now cinder. What will be lost to civilization? I find myself believing that the soldiers could have saved the library, but let it burn to ashes. These words are ashes on an empty afternoon. Words are not soldiers. Wasted civilizations return to essence, white. And I want to close with one more poem by Nazik al-Malaika. And she spent most of her life, although she was born in Iraq, she spent most of her life in exile. She had been in exile continuously since 1970, and she died in Cairo. And one of the things about her is that she was one of the first of the modern poets to break from the traditions of poetry in the Arabic language and believed that she could experiment, she could write in free verse. She got into a bit of trouble for that. This poem is called New Year. New Year, don't come to our homes, for we are wanderers from a ghost world denied by man. Night flees from us. Fate has deserted us. We live as wandering spirits with no memory, no dreams, no longings, no hopes. The horizons of our eyes have grown ashen, the gray of a still lake, like our silent brows, pulseless, heatless, denuded of poetry. We live not knowing life. New Year, move on. There is the path to lead your footsteps. Ours are veins of hard reed, and we know not of sadness. We wish to be dead and refused by the graves. We wish to write history by the years. If only we knew what it is to be bound to a place. If only snow could bring us winter to wrap our faces in darkness. If only memory or hope or regret could one day block our country from its path. If only we feared madness. If only our lives could be disturbed by travel or shock or the sadness of an impossible love. If only we could die like other people.
Thank you for listening to Radio Tabule, fresh content west of the Middle East. Please support the programs of Levantine Cultural Center with your contributions. Visit levantinecenter.org to learn more about how you can become involved. Radio Tabule produced by Jordan El-Gravli, Jen Reinhardt, and Frida Becker, with music from Omar Fidel, omarfidel.com.